to The Upper Hand, where Chuck and Chris talk hand surgery.
We are two hand surgeons at Washington University in St. Louis, here to talk about all aspects of hand surgery, from technical to personal.
Thank you for subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
And be sure to leave a review. That helps us get the word out.
Hey, Chris.
Oh, hey, Chuck.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I am doing fantastic. It is another great day to be doing a podcast.
Yeah, it's a beautiful day outside in St. Louis. We are all inside right now, and we are talking to each other via lots of social distance.
Absolutely. Once again, Zoom is saving our podcast.
And a lot of other things, maybe things that don't need to be saved, including our podcast. But
Here we go again. Today's another special day.
Yes, we have another very special guest. Who is that?
Absolutely. We have our partner. And we're not going to interview all of our partners, but Marty Boyer is a special partner because we have known him for a long time, and he is the president of the Hand Society. And so he has a lot of insight into that organization, and we both are interested in its principles and how it goes about its business. And we are both very respectful of what it has accomplished already in a very difficult time for hand surgery, hand surgeons, and health in general in the U.S.
Well, welcome to the sitting president of the American Society for Surgery of the Hand, Dr. Marty Boyer. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you both very much. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah. So why don't you share what your hopes were for your presidential year? What did you have on the table, and what were you trying to accomplish during this really important year?
What I was trying to do, Chuck, is basically improve access and improve the quality and the uniformity of fellow education across the country and across the society. And there were a lot of initiatives that we undertook at the beginning of the year to accomplish this, but plans have changed a bit, as you know.
Well, before we get into how plans have changed, can you tell us about why you picked fellow education?
I've been head of the fellowship here at WashU since 1999, really, since Dr. Gelberman hired me. And I really do love the fellows a lot, like my former fellowship mentor, Dr. Bill Kleinman at the Indiana Hand to Shoulder Center does. I give them a lot of time. I give them a lot of psychic energy. And I just felt that there were slight iterative improvements that we could make in the quality and extent of their education. And that was going to be my presidential mission.
And what else, what specifics, I should say, did you have planned to accomplish this goal?
Sure, we were going to partner, and we did to a certain extent partner with the ACGME and the RRC. Peter Murray is the head of that, to improve the end of the year fellowship review process and establish some basic case minimums that hand fellows would be required to have by the end of their fellowship to demonstrate proficiency. There's a Hand 50 lecture series, which I can talk about afterwards. There's a microsurgery lecture series. There's also some other topics in practice, such as an epic instructional video that was put together by Sanj Kakkar.
So Marty, how variable do you think the fellow experience is across different fellowship programs?
I think there's a lot of variability, Chris. Some programs are very, very detailed in terms of smaller cases, a lot of outpatient hand surgery, but not a lot of major reconstruction, not a lot of plexus or congenital or microvascular. And there's a lot of fellowships that are the opposite, that don't have the fellows do trigger fingers or carpal tunnels or ganglions or decor veins or basal joint arthroplasties. And what we're hoping to accomplish is to have some sense, or have fellowships have some sense, of where they are in the grand scheme of U.S. fellowships, to see if there are areas that they can perhaps improve upon and improve the fellowship experience.
That makes a lot of sense, and that can only be helpful. And tell me more about the Hand 50. What was your vision for this type of educational process?
Everybody seems to be moving to online education, even before what's gone on in the last month and a half. And what the goal was to establish a repository of the best lectures on the most important topics in hand surgery given by the best teachers in the Hand Society. We all know that Marty Posner gives a great lecture on the extensor mechanism to his residents and fellows at NYU. Why shouldn't our fellows have access to that same lecture? So we asked Marty to record his lecture, and his lecture is now on Hand 50. And there are many lectures like this. Dr. Goldfarb's had two lectures on congenital in Hand 50. Dr. D, I believe you're going to do a lecture on electrodiagnostics, which I think is something that is going to be really well received by every single fellow in the United States. Why should the WashU fellows be the only ones that get it? Give it to everybody.
So as a fellowship director, in addition to being president of the Hand Society and spearheading Hand 50, how has this whole process of developing Hand 50 and now implementing Hand 50, how has that changed your perspective as a fellowship director?
I think it opens up a whole new world of instruction for the fellows. I think the fellows can prep for cases more easily by reading or listening to a lecture on a particular topic. I think fellows can go, for example, to Hand E to learn the video, to watch the video rather, of the surgical technique, and then go to Hand 50 to see a lecture or hear a lecture on that particular topic. So it's really a 360-degree exposure to a particular topic that the fellow can access, not only from my, which is admittedly a biased, every one of us is biased in our own way viewpoint, but have a real experienced teacher that's thought a lot about the process, give their opinion and give their summary of what's important about a particular condition.
It is a fascinating thing, because when I was a resident and fellow, video was not an option. And, you know, it meant reading in a textbook or even better, looking for the right article. And there's still value in that. And I believe today's trainees understand the value in those venues for learning. But video is where it's at. And if you talk to residents and fellows, you appreciate their appreciation for this type of learning. And so what the Hand Study is doing is on point for what our trainees want today. So I applaud your efforts in that regard.
And it'll become even more important in the current environment, right? So, I mean, with a lot of distance education going on now, I think we're going to see a greater appreciation for quality content. And Hand 50, I think, is a great step and, you know, almost serendipitously timed for this.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Chris. It's pretty fortuitous that we got this up and running and had it ready for March, which is really when everything changed.
So everything changed as president of the Hand Society once COVID-19 came to the forefront, particularly in the United States. And what's been the response from the Hand Society? What are the needs being expressed by hand surgeon members, and what is the Hand Society doing to address those?
The Hand Society is a volunteer organization that is there solely for the benefit of its membership. And I personally look upon the Hand Society as an educational organization, but the thing that has really come to the fore in the last month or 2 months is that it is also an organization where practitioners can talk about and try and understand the forces that are acting on their practice. And the CARES Act, the government bailout acts, all the different forces, and CDC, American College of Surgeons, ACG, AMA, dictums and newsletters and emails that are coming out have to be distilled by someone through a still of the hand surgeon's viewpoint. And that's what the Hand Society is doing, is really trying to stay on top of what is relevant to hand surgical practice in the United States, both private and academic.
I'm guessing that even more than you normally would have had, your connection with the key folks at the Hand Society has been increased. And so I know you've been working super hard on this, but you have great partners with the Hand Society.
We do. Mark Anderson is the CEO. Pam Schroeder is his deputy. We all know Angela Gaspi is the head of the education. And then the rest of the C-suite, Daniel Roseman, Jake, Bill, and... God, I know I'm forgetting somebody.
For sure.
And Tara's piece is are all doing really yeoman's work in terms of bringing important information to the membership.
So leadership is something we talk a lot about. And obviously, as president of the Hand Society, you were and are a leader. And one of the traits of a good leader is one that can pivot an organization. And I'm not trying to just say that, but tell me how you guys at the Hand Society, and I imagine it's a strong partnership specifically with you and Mark and the presidential line, but how specifically were you guys able to pivot so quickly? And I'll say with specifics, and I shared this with you, I have been incredibly impressed by the Hand Society emails. I think from all the organizations to which I belong, the Hand Society has been providing the most germane and interesting and educational content.
Chris, do you share that thinking?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the Hand Society emails are able to strike a balance of being informative yet brief. And you know, like Chuck said, they're germane. It's things that affect practicing hand surgeons. Other organizations tend to send in a lot of information and do it in a very repetitive way, which makes it hard to distill that. So I also have an appreciation for what the Hand Society is doing there.
So was the pivot intentional? And you guys said, hey, look, COVID's here. We need to specifically spend 95% of our effort on COVID, or did it just happen as it kind of happens?
No, it happened in somewhat of a deliberate way. Basically, when the emails started coming to us from the AMA, from the American College of Surgeons, from the Academy, about the different relevant considerations in the management of our practices because of this pandemic, it became pretty clear based on input from the listserv and based on input from other people to me personally that the Hand Society's position on certain issues was sought by the membership. Do we close our surgery centers? Do we keep them open? What are other people doing with respect to social distancing? Are you doing telehealth, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? And there was a real hunger for a sense of community, which is what the Hand Surgical Society, the Hand Society is. It's a community of surgeons that are all trying to do the same thing and make people better. So that's really where the pivot occurred. It was a soft pivot, but the real change in philosophy came with this COVID-19 daily or almost daily email summarizing relevant happenings across the country that would be of relevance to a practicing hand surgeon.
So the AOS, the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, estimates that private practice groups are about maybe 30% of orthopedic surgeons at this point, which is obviously down from decades before. For hand surgeons, what estimate do you have of, you know, what percentage of American hand surgeons are in private practice? And what are the particular things that you're doing to help those surgeons get through this? Because obviously there's another component beyond patient care, that's the small business aspect.
Yeah, Steve McCollum is the head of our practice division. And Jeff Greenberg, who's the vice president, is the former president of the practice, director of the practice division, rather. What they're trying to focus on is the basic nuts and bolts of hand surgical practice of the private practitioner. I don't know in terms of numbers what the percentage is of private practitioners, but I can tell you the majority of hand surgeons are private practitioners.
Yeah, it's so interesting. At a recent faculty meeting, we had the discussion. I believe I made the point that I'd been interviewing someone for a position, and they commented that surgery centers are at risk for failing. And I think that's obvious once it's stated. And someone else in our group mentioned that small hospitals are likewise at risk of failure. And the economic realities of this are going to challenge hand surgeons everywhere, that goes without saying, but especially those in smaller groups and private groups that will hopefully get some help from the government. But it's just really scary times. And the fact that the Hand Society has been so supportive in providing information is amazing.
Yeah, Chris, I believe leader, the chair of the Government Advisory Committee. And I know you've been very active in terms of trying to improve hand surgeons' lot in Washington, as it were. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because that has definite relevance in terms of what the Hand Society is trying to do now, too.
Well, the one of the major limitations of the legislation that's already been passed is that for some practices that have more than more than 50 employees, but exceed that government threshold for, quote, a small business. And some larger practices have more than 500 employees, and then they wouldn't be eligible for some of these economic relief. And then also some practices that are grossing more than a certain amount in revenue per year are also not going to be eligible because they're not considered a small business. So what the AAOS is doing, and they've been informing us as members of the Government Affairs Committee on the Hand Society, is that they are trying to push for any physician practice, no matter the size, to be included in any sort of economic relief package. And that'll affect, have an impact on some of the larger groups that are huge employers in their community. So beyond, you know, making sure that access to hand surgery is able, they also want to make sure that those practices are able to keep employing the numerous support staff in the community.
Yeah, the American College of Surgeons is doing the same thing. They have a very strong presence apparently as well in Washington on Capitol Hill. And Scott Levin is active in that group.
It's amazing the pace of this change and what Chris just shared and what others have shared. It's really valuable. And I think it's still valuable. And we're recording this on April the 11th. It'll be valuable until we get ourselves through this epidemic or pandemic, I guess. To really, for each of us to dive in, or some of us to dive in deep on the details. So for example, at WashU, we're trying to figure out what furlough means and what the state offers as far as assistance. It's not something that any of us have any experience with, because no one can ever recall this conversation in healthcare. Healthcare has always been about, if you are open and do a good job, you will be successful. And now there's real threats to employment. We're thinking about things we simply never thought about. So again, I applaud the efforts of all the organizations, and most pertinent to me has been the Hand Society.
I think this is the type of moment that shows the importance of advocacy and connections with groups in Washington, because everything in American healthcare is so intertwined with business, for better or worse. Having an understanding of these issues is one thing, and then also being able to rely on relationships and communication with those people that are either on the Hill and doing the work in Congress, or doing the regulatory and implementing the things that are passed by Congress.
I think that's great. Why don't we circle back to sort of where we started talking about education? And so we're all practicing social distancing from one another, which is why we're on a Zoom call. But Marty, tell me more about the concept of distance learning. Like, how do you see that evolving from where we were 3 months ago to where we might be in another 3 months?
You know, arguably, Chuck, the learning now might be better than it was previously, because the focus really is more national and even international in terms of allowing our fellows to gain experience and gain knowledge, really almost in a crowdsourced kind of way. And I think the important thing to understand in all this is that 8 or 9 years ago, there was a very conscious decision, a deliberate decision made by the Hand Society, spurred by Mark Anderson, to become cloud-based, to become a cloud-based organization, and not dependent on local servers, not dependent on in-house hardware for accessing and storing data. And because that's happened, there hasn't been a person, more than one person, who looks through the mail. But there hasn't been a person at 822 West Washington, which is the Hand Society's pied-à-terre, which is where they live, in the last 2 or 3 weeks, during which all of this activity has happened. And it's really remarkable that everything that is coming from the Hand Society now is coming from the homes of the people that are employed by the Hand Society. All the emails, all the importance. Topics and just everything is done remotely. And that's all because a conscious decision was made about 8 to 9 years ago.
How do you think that we can address some of the concerns from trainees, fellows to some extent, but mainly some of the residents about not getting the hands-on surgical training at this point in their in COVID-19? How do you think, you know, obviously the distance learning materials we have can provide great didactic education, but how do we keep their hands going? How do we assure them that their skills will be there?
Well, you know, it's hard to assure anybody of anything, especially these days, but I think it brings back into focus the importance of making the fellowship a year long, and that it has to be a uniform dose, I guess, daily dose of reps, of hands-on surgical experience. You can't expect a fellow to watch for the first 6 months and then operate the second 6 months, because we don't know that the second 6 months is necessarily going to be there. So the short answer is I don't really know. There's cadaver work that can be done, but you can't have too many people in the same room. I think most of what we do has to be emergency work and infections and cancer surgery. That's the only way a fellow is going to get their reps at this point in time.
I think it's interesting. A couple more comments, and then we should probably wrap up. I think it's interesting. I think the way we are handling it now in St. Louis is probably about as good as we could handle it. And that is, our fellows have had a great experience up to this point. They've been very hands-on throughout the year. Now we have our fellows coming to our elective surgeries, which granted aren't a lot, but there are enough, you know, trauma cases that we deal with, and being a trauma center is advantageous in that regard. And we keep them out of the clinic, which is, disappointing, because that's a big part of learning, but they've been there. But I think for safety reasons, they don't need to be in our clinics with being smaller. So I'm kind of proud of how we're doing it. And I will say the other thing you mentioned, Marty, which is that you have invited all of our ex-fellows and residents to now join our conferences on Monday morning with the Zoom opportunity. And I think that's awesome. And it's been really fun to see faces joining in because they have time.
Yeah, I believe Jerry Huang in Seattle started that. And, part of being a good leader is being a good listener. And no one's ever accused me of that, but still, I think it's a reasonable thing that we've done.
I thought you would quote our former partner, Dr. Mansky, go ahead. Why don't you do it?
Well, it's a wonderful saying. Life is not about the creation of opportunities. It's about recognizing opportunities when they present themselves to you.
Chris, any final comments?
Well, I think it'll be really interesting to see where all of this goes in terms of the resumption of our hand surgery practices as we used to know them, and to see where things evolve to. I thank Marty and everybody at the Hand Society for providing such an excellent platform for distance learning. This goes back many years to Hand E, but now it's been strengthened by Hand 50. So thank you for all your contributions.
Thank you both.
I agree. Thank you. Thanks for joining us this morning. And again, I know you're working super hard, and our membership is grateful for that. So thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. That's a wrap on another The Upper Hand podcast. It's been fun.
Well, let's see how many more people listen in. Thank you to everybody who has downloaded, rated, and reviewed. And we look forward to continuing the discussion next week.
Hey, Chris, that was fun. Let's do it again real soon.
Sounds good. Well, be sure to check us out on Twitter at Hand Podcast. Hey, Chuck, what's your Twitter handle?
Mine is at Congenital Hand. What about you?
Mine is at Chris DMD, spelled DY. And if you'd like to email us, you can reach us at handpodcast@gmail.com.
And remember, please subscribe wherever you get your podcast.
And be sure to leave a review. That helps us get the word out.
Special thanks to Peter Martin for the amazing music. And remember, keep the upper hand and come back next time.